Coming up next on The Voice of Alabama Politics, more library troubles. Also, Alabama has new district maps, and Tommy Tuberville says he's most pro-military.
An army without leaders is like a foot without a big toe.
Big toe or pain in the rear? No contest. All this and much, much more coming up next on The V. Welcome to The Voice of Alabama Politics, where we tackle the tough issues so you have the hard facts. I'm your host, Bill Britt, and as always, I'm joined by Susan Britt, research guru extraordinaire, and Josh Moon, columnist and investigative reporter at APR. Welcome.
Hey, y'all.
Hi, guys.
Well, this past Thursday, U.S. District Court decided that Alabama will now have a second black district. They chose map 3, which a lot of people were in favor of. Josh, you want to give us a little update on how that went down?
Yeah, it's not quite a majority black district, because I believe it comes out to right at about 49% black voting age population in that district. But still, when you looked at the breakdowns of the way some of the more recent races have gone, a lot of people felt fairly comfortable that black voters in that district, in that new second congressional district that has been created, would have a pretty good influence on the vote, and that they could elect a candidate of their choosing if they chose to do so. And so that was the goal. That was the goal, was to give black voters some power in a second congressional district, and that seems to be the case with the new maps.
And what they said in the ruling was to a majority black district or something quite close to it. And this is quite close to it. So while many of our Republican friends are not dancing in the street, neither are our Democratic friends. But there's a fair shot.
Fair.
A fair shot.
That's the word.
And that's what elections should be, is a fair shot. And we do not have that in Alabama. Our districts are so gerrymandered that it is really... Everything happens at the primary level, and the most extreme people come out for the primaries, and so therefore you never get representative government.
Right.
Yeah, it sure would be nice if we could get 7 districts that all had some influence going both ways. Everybody would have an effect, and we could get rid of some of the extremes. That we deal with all the time, and actually get back to making a difference in a lot of these districts. I think that's why Terry Sewell's district is really one of the best, and why she works so hard over there, is she knows that a lot of more conservative voters have a say in that district. And I think she's worked very hard to appease them. And I think you would be hard pressed to find a lot of conservatives who are unhappy with Terry Sewell in that district.
And I think you could, somebody like Mike Rogers could get elected in a district that was fairly, he doesn't have to be gerrymandered to get elected.
They actually do their job and representing the people, whether they're conservative or
he gets into a fight on the floor every now and then. No.
Yeah.
He does. Well, I kind of like that. I mean, somebody needed to deck Matt Gaetz a long time ago.
Yeah.
But there you go.
Yeah, he'll pick up a lot of Democratic support if he hits Matt Gaetz one good time, I can tell you that.
Well, I tell you, talk about getting things done in Washington. We have Tommy Tuberville, who can't do anything but show his hiney, as my mother used to say. And he's done it again this past week. He in the Senate chamber, he said that he was the most military person up there. Most military person up there, Susan.
Yeah, no, well, I'm sorry. My dad was a World War II vet, too. I'm pro-military, but I am not the most military anywhere when I got veterans all around me all the time. How dare he say something like that?
Tommy Tuberville never served a day in uniform. He might have put on some cleats and pads, and he wasn't very good at that, but he never served a day, and he got called out by a military man there. Mark Kelly, who's a veteran, flew 39 combat missions in Iraq. And Josh, he said, you have no right, sir, to say that you're the most pro-military person in the Senate.
No, and not only has he never served, we've also got quite a record of him just kind of screwing around with the military over these promotions and really screwing over a lot of good families out there that they're trying to move and trying to go to places where they're going to live permanently or semi-permanently anyway. And, you know, and he's messing with that over his own political beliefs. And so, I mean, you total all that up, and it's just a ludicrous statement for somebody to make, especially somebody who never served, you know?
Yeah. And look, it's not only that. He had a golf tournament 2 weeks ago back here in Alabama where the moneyed class all got together and drove around in golf carts and hit balls and hung out. I imagine they might have drank a beer or two. Nothing wrong with any of that.
No.
However, it was for his Veterans Foundation,
mm-hmm.
which we know he hasn't given that money to veterans very much. He's given a very tiny percentage to veterans. I mean, they're mm-hmm. under an audit because they've given so little.
Doesn't that sound familiar? Wasn't that something like about Trump's tax returns?
Yeah, well.
Yeah, we're under an audit, so he could. Oh, well, maybe.
So we called up to D.C. and asked Tommy Tuberville's staff, could they tell us, has he provided his salary to veterans? And has he given any more money to veterans from his foundation? They wouldn't tell us, Josh.
Well, yeah, that seems to be the M.O. You know, they got into a little bit of trouble. We wrote some stories a few months back about this, and because he'd given so very little. And at that point, I believe the website and a lot of the things were shut down for the foundation because, you know, they were trying to get things back in order and get it back going. And as far as anybody can tell, it's still shut down, and there's still nobody there doing anything. So I'm not exactly sure where the money's going. I guess we'll have to see in the coming weeks and months, maybe with enough pressure, they'll do the right thing and put a majority of the money over there. But you got to know in the past that has not been the case. And so people asking questions about this, they're very fair questions given his track record.
Well, I'm sorry, from an accounting background, it's pretty simple. Money in, money out. It doesn't take more than two or three clicks to make that happen. I understand it's a, you know, 501c3, I'm sure, but it is not that difficult. Money in, money out. Two entries in a bookkeeping.
Well, I think the problem is that they spent more money on personnel and a truck and all that stuff than they did on veterans. And that's not something you can just paper over.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly right. They spent a lot of money on the personnel, a lot of money on expenses. And I mean, it was a minuscule amount of money that actually went to the veterans organization.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's not given his salary as he had pledged to do and had tried to, you know, force the other candidates in the race when he was running for Senate to do as well. And he's not done it this entire time he's been in there. And he owes him quite a bit of money at this point if he's going to actually carry through with that promise.
Well, he can't be the most military and spend the money on personnel and truck and all that when it was supposed to be designed to send it straight to veterans organizations.
Mm-hmm. Maybe he's talking about the Russian military.
Well, possibly.
It could be a pro-Wagner group. Anyway, we're going to have to leave it right there. You're watching The V, the voice of Alabama politics. We'll be right back.
As a paramedic, you wouldn't believe the things that we've seen.
I've seen all types of horrible things.
I mean, we're there basically picking up the pieces from your worst day.
Everyone is just driving and not paying attention.
We all have the same goal. All of us want to go home alive and safe and harm nobody else in the process.
Slow down. Be careful. Care about the other people on the road. Don't be the reason that someone else doesn't go home tonight.
Today, Montgomery is a safer city. It's time to shift the narrative and take control of our future. We're reopening community centers, remediating blight, and revitalizing neighborhoods across the city. And we're unleashing new opportunities. Over the past year, companies have invested a record-setting $2 billion in Montgomery and created 2,000 jobs. This is a new Montgomery. And together, we're reimagining the possibilities.
Welcome back to The V, the voice of Alabama politics. You know, we keep seeing these ultra-right folks who claim to be Republicans. I don't believe they're Republicans. I think they go by Republican and conservative. But they're ultra-right-wing folks who just get so excited and panicked about the outrage du jour. That means the outrage of the day,
yes,
right?
Yes.
And right now the outrage has gone from critical race theory to ESG, and now libraries are the sticking point for these ultra-right fascists. Mm-hmm. Let's call them what they really are. They want government to control every aspect of people's lives. And they're starting with children in the libraries. And they claim that there's obscenity and pornography in the libraries. Huntsville, right up in your area, Huntsville and Madison, they removed books prematurely and made excuses for it. Some of the librarians in Madison County are mad about what's going on in probably the most progressive city and county in the state, Josh.
Yeah, they should be. I mean, yeah, you're right. It's it is just the outrage of the day. And, you know, I don't know that there's actually a grander plan here other than they have. Look, if you want to talk about protecting children. OK, I wrote a column that came out Thursday. And in that, you know, I talked about where we rank. We are third in the country in child gun deaths. We are fifth worst in the country for child health care, for infant mortality rate. We're at the bottom typically in education on things. All of those things have to do with child welfare. And if you wanted to protect children, those would be the things that you would actually go out and attack. These things where you would talk about the children who don't have after school care and appropriate care. They don't have proper medical care, and they're suffering day in and day out because they're also food insecure. We're also top five in food insecure children. So, but instead we do these things and talk about the CRT that's being taught in the classroom, and we talk about the books in the library and pretend as though our governor has now sent out two press release letters. To talk about this overwhelming problem of books in a library that children may be able to sneak in and read, which I had missed this whole new fad of children running off and sneaking into libraries to read cartoon porn. You know, I mean, it's unbelievable that this is what you choose to attack. And the only reason you do it is because you have no idea how to actually work those problems that are actually hurting children.
You're absolutely right in that, and the problem here is that has to do with policy. They're not interested in actually doing the work, coming up with the policy, coming up with the ideas, coming up with the legislation to be able to handle these problems. So they say, oh, look over here. No, we've got books in the library. Oh my God. Oh, we've got critical race theory. Oh my God. And that's something you can talk about and not really have to do very much work to get anything accomplished with
it. It's a political con game.
Stirred up.
Yes,
yeah,
it is. And one of the things that's disturbing to me is they keep going pornography, inappropriate content. They don't define any of it.
No.
And what they're talking about is LGBTQ literature, even though it's benign. I hate to inform these folks, you are not going to get rid of gay people. You're not going to get rid of transgender people. You cannot legislate them out of existence. It won't work. It's impossible.
Yeah. Let me bring something to the people here. It's not that these people haven't always been around. It's just that the new generations are not afraid anymore. Not afraid of being killed. Not afraid of being beaten up like it used to be, you know, historically.
Yeah, I want to say, too, we also have, pointed this out in the column as well, we also have the fifth highest rates of teen pregnancy and the fourth highest rate of sexually transmitted diseases among young people. So maybe them sneaking into a library and picking up a book about sex wouldn't be the worst thing for any of us. Okay?
You're
right.
But this goes back to this misguided crusade, I call it, of culture wars.
Yes.
I mean, it is like some holy crusade that they want to manipulate how people live.
Control.
Control. But let me help with what I think is true. You can no more control culture without taking weapons and arresting people and threatening to kill them. You know, they do this in Russia. They do this in China. They do this in totalitarian states. They do this in Iran and Iraq. They murder these people, so they keep them in the closet. Now, unless you're willing to start murdering people, you're going to have to accept that culture grows organically and that Taylor Swift is not on your side. And if Taylor Swift is not on your side, baby, you're in a lonesome world.
you're fighting an uphill battle. I mean, it's just ludicrous that we're talking about this with all of the real things that are out there affecting children negatively in this state, that we have chosen to focus on the fact that they may wander into a library and see a book somewhere that has cartoon depictions of people having sex or sexual acts or whatever in an effort to, what those books are for educational purposes. They're for parents and kids to look at and read and have a better understanding of what's going on and what's out there in the world and what the reality that they're going to be facing as teenagers today. And, you know, this idea that you can protect and shell these kids from this stuff, it's nonsense. It's a fever dream from simple-minded folks.
This goes back to, you know, the era where people were saying, just say no to sex as a teenager. That doesn't work.
No.
It doesn't work. We need to prepare them for what they're facing as teenagers.
Well,
grow up, people. Well, open your eyes.
And that's young teens, but they act like it's children that are
8-year-olds,
under 12 years old. And the thing is that there are children who have two daddies. There are children who have two mommies. You know what a lot of kids in Alabama that are heterosexual don't have? A daddy, because we have so many single women that are pregnant. Mm-hmm. They don't have a father. They had a sperm donor, but they don't have a parent. And you know, that's a bigger problem than having two mommies or two daddies. It's a much bigger problem.
That's where you get into your food insecurity and all those things.
Yeah. You know, the highest indicator of adult poverty is single parenthood. That's it. But we don't seem to worry about that. We're worried about some books.
Too much work.
Well, that's a lot of work. All right. Yeah. You're watching the voice of Alabama politics. We'll be right back.
My personal biggest pet peeve is kids who are not properly restrained, whether that be in a booster seat, a car seat, or even a simple seatbelt. Kids, they become projectiles, and it's terrifying.
It absolutely breaks my heart to know that something so innocent could be punished so severely.
Your children rely on you to be that person that says, no, you need to put your seatbelt on.
Your home is your most valuable asset, but what if someone tried to steal it from you? Property fraud is one of the fastest growing areas of fraud in the country today.
As a district attorney, I've seen firsthand the devastating effects of property fraud. That's why I'm proud to support the Montgomery County Probate Court's REACT program.
REACT is designed to protect your property and to give you peace of mind. By signing up, you'll receive an email notification if a document is filed against your property.
This program is a game changer. It has the potential to prevent fraud and protect countless homeowners throughout Montgomery County.
So don't wait. Sign up for REACT today and protect your home.
Protect your home with REACT. Sign up today.
Welcome back to The Bee, the voice of Alabama politics. Speaker of the House Nathaniel Ledbetter this past week set up a committee, to look at workforce participation in the state. What we found from surveys is that while unemployment is low and jobs are plentiful, there are some folks that are not participating in the workforce, and they're trying to discover why that is and how they address this problem. So I think it's a good idea. It's going to be kind of interesting to see what the solutions are, but one of the big ones is childcare. And I know, Josh, you can speak to that. But Susan, these numbers are outrageous.
They are. And we're talking about approximately 140,000 job openings that are out there. But we've still got 48,834 people unemployed. So how, where is the margin in there that we can get the unemployed people to those jobs? Because the labor force participation rate stands at only about 57%.
And Josh, one of the things we know is that if you do not have child care, mm-hmm. somebody's got to stay at home. Mm-hmm. And this is a big problem. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the interesting things you bring up World War II. In World War II, the factories, because they depended on women workers, the factories provided child care mm-hmm. for the women. That was a big thing. Yeah. Many industrialized countries provide child care, yeah. free yeah. child care, or very they affordable do. Child care. Mm-hmm. We don't have yeah. any child care.
Yeah, that's, you know, why don't we have any child care, Bill? What we used to have some tax offsets for that. What happened to those? What happened to those? Who killed those?
We may not care about children like we used to.
Who killed them? We just recently had them. We had them just not too long ago. We had these great tax breaks that allowed us to send our kids to after school care and all sorts of places, daycare when they're young, and it was a nice offset. You could actually, well, for most people, you could actually send your kid to a pretty safe daycare with that. But they died. Who killed them?
I have no idea, Josh.
I think it might have been the people in the party that Nathaniel Ledbetter is currently leading. So we could start there with that. And listen, this is not hard. This is not hard. It's simple math, okay? If you're going to go to one of these jobs and you're going to make roughly, let's say you're going to make $3,000 a month, and then you're going to have child care that's going to take more than half of that out, you can't go to work, man. You're better off at home. And it just, the math never makes any sense here. And these ideas that keep coming in these studies, we don't need to study it. We know what it is. We know that the healthcare problem that we have in this state, where if we had expanded Medicaid, we would have a whole lot more money to dish around to folks, you know, and that we wouldn't be discouraging people from entering the job market. And if we provided some level of child care, just tax breaks, tax incentives to companies, whatever. I believe yeah. Anthony Daniels, the leader, Democratic House Minority Leader, this past session tried to introduce a bill that would have given companies tax breaks for having child care on their premises. Those sorts of things make a difference, and we don't need to study it. We know what's keeping them at home.
Yeah, and the other thing they do talk about briefly is mental health. Well, a lot of the mental health problems would be covered if you expanded Medicaid. And listen, I'm not advocating for a welfare state. I'm just saying advocate for using our resources that are already available.
This is not
the expanding Medicaid is already available. Childcare tax incentives are already available.
What we've done through our economic policies in here is we have depressed the bottom 75% of workers every day to the point that they cannot afford basic necessities that they need to go out and enter the job force. This is not hard math. We've done this to ourselves through the policy of corporate welfare that we've instituted in this country. And that's what we're doing now. When we have CEOs making 300 times what the average worker is making, well, then that elevates the cost of things to the point that the average folks aren't going to be able to afford it anymore. This isn't hard, man. Help some folks out and you'll get people in the workforce.
The problem is this all started 40 years ago with trickle-down economics.
Yeah. It's also known as trickle-on economics.
That is absolutely has been trickled on the working class ever since.
That's the only thing that's been trickling.
Yeah, and Alabama has a good workforce development plan, but we do not have the type of, we don't continue to give the type of tools that will let people go to work. I mean,
if you have all of these jobs available, but you put barriers in between the jobs and the people that need to go to work, you can do all the workforce development you want to do. It won't make any difference.
That's exactly right. And it can't be a good workforce development plan if you can't get the workforce out to do work. I mean, it's just, you can't do it. You know, that's step one in workforce development is actually having the workforce.
Well, and we've got jobs, you know, at least we've got jobs.
140,000 of them.
There you go.
Yeah.
Hey, on a positive note, this Governor Kate, and I'm sure we can turn this into a negative.
Of course we can.
There is always a dark cloud behind every silver light.
Hey, give me a minute. I'm going with you on that.
So Governor Ivey has declared this October, the historic Black College and University Month. Mm-hmm. You know, we have, I think, the most Black colleges of any state in the United States.
Is this the month that we're going to give Alabama A&M the $537 million that we owe?
Josh, dang it, you took the words right out of my mouth.
Y'all didn't even get 30 seconds into this before you came up with something.
That's great that it's a month, but, you know, actually doing something that would help them would be better.
No, just you can't have anything nice around here, you know? Anyway, we should be very proud of our historically Black colleges and universities, and I appreciate the Governor Ivey declared that we need to do more for them. I think that's the key, right?
Yes. Right. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, if we can fix the maps, maybe we can fix the underfunding of the Black colleges.
Would be nice. Because, again, this is how people leave poverty. This is how people build the middle class. This is how people build wealth. Go to college, get an education. That's it. That's a simple thing, right, Josh?
Well, it is for a lot of people. It has not typically been, or was not for a long period of time, for Black Alabamians. And that's where the HBCUs have come in, and they have lifted generations of Black families out of poverty. And given people who would never otherwise have a chance to attend college and to get degrees and enter professional fields that opportunity, and they should be, you know, there should be more than a month to thank them for all that they've done for aiding poverty and turning around the discrimination that we accepted for so long.
Well, we are fortunate to have so many, and we are fortunate to have the good people that run them, and let's hope that the legislature will see fit to start funding them the way they fund other schools.
Agreed.
All right, that's going to have to be the last word. You've been watching The V, the voice of Alabama politics. You watch us because we watch them.